Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we chat with writers about writing and creating and, you know, just the writer's life and all that kind of stuff, inspiration, whatever we've decided to talk about on any random day. My guest today is Lane Stone. Hi, Lane.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm in New York, which is also known as the horn-blowing capital of the world for Thriller Fest.
Yeah. So Lane's up at Thriller Fest this weekend, which is an annual convention that takes place in Manhattan and celebrates thrillers. And it's really fun. It's a very cool conference to go to. And you're enjoying it, yeah? You're having fun so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, but I've been a couple times and I do miss it. I will be back. Be back out in the world next year. So at the end of this year, not even next year, this year. I'm just going to give you a brief introduction. Lane Stone, her husband, Larry Korb, and their standard schnauzer, Cordy. I like how it all kind of goes together. Cordy, Korb, and Lane live in Alexandria, Virginia during the week and Lewes, Delaware on the weekends. That's the beach, right? Is it Lewes?
Lewes.
Lewes, but spelled L-E-W-E-S.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, we are Ocean City people, so I'm aware that Delaware has nice shores, so that's close by. When not writing, Lane enjoys characteristic baby boomer pursuits. Traveling, she went to Antarctica in March of 2022. That sounds very cool. And volunteering for good causes, she serves on several boards. The Collector, which is her most recent book, is her first art thriller. Her other series are the Pet Palace Mysteries and the Tiara Investigation Mysteries. Lane has a postgraduate certificate in antiquities, theft, and art crime, which plays very, very well into your plot for The Collector. She's a member of Sisters in Crime, Mystery Writers of America, and International Thriller Writers. And Lane is represented by Dawn Dowdle at Blue Ridge Literary Agency. Shout out to Dawn. We always have to give a shout out to Dawn. My buddy, I talk to her constantly. So The Collector, tell us a little bit about The Collector.
It's a heroine that I don't think you've ever seen before. And I really like her a lot. I like so much about her. It was a lot of fun to write, and she must solve a world war on art and keep her secrets. It was fun to have a really big playground because she's going around the world, and it was fun to talk about art.
Yeah, for sure. Well, she definitely has she leads an interesting life. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
And she has a very interesting job. And, she's a very unique character. So there is no other character. She reminds me of, she's like a cross between like a female James Bond and, the Thomas Crown. I kept picturing Rene Russo in the Thomas Crown Affair, even though I know that's the newer version of the movie, but I like that one. That's my favorite version of the movie, is the new one with Pierce Brosnan. But so I'm reading, you know, as your editor, I'm reading the book multiple times. And those were the images that kept coming to me, because I do love that. I just love that movie. I love Pierce
Brosnan. Yeah, I do too.
And it's not giving too much away to say that, because it's in one of the first scenes, that there's someone has come in and thrown paint on a masterpiece painting. And then there's a dead body too. So that's like the first boom. So she's also there's a murder, but then you're also, people are destroying beautiful art, and that happens in real life. I mean, we've all seen it happen. People try to
destroy it. You know, the guy that smeared the Mona Lisa with cake.
Yeah. What is wrong with people?
Yeah. It was a climate protest, and he dressed up. He was in a wheelchair, dressed like an older lady, and he jumps up. And first, he tried to break the glass. What kind of idiot is? Of course, it's bulletproof glass. And then he started smearing it with a piece of cake. Of course, he was arrested and hauled out of there.
Right. Did that fix the environmental issues? I'm not sure. I can't remember if that.
He just started screaming about climate change.
Like, I'm being sarcastic. I don't see the correlation between.
Neither do I. Like, what did Mona Lisa have to do with climate change?
Right. well, we're applying logic to an illogical act, so we're trying. Yeah. You can't figure out something.
But art brings about strong emotions and strong responses in people.
That is true. And that, I think that is the underlying current, that's the underlying theme of the book, that, mm-hmm. you know, because she really does dedicate herself to figuring this out, because she talks about the art as well, almost like a spiritual way. Like, she's so enthralled by it, and like, it needs to protect it. She feels like she's protecting the art almost like you would feel like you're protecting a person or a child, sure. or a family yeah. member. Like, she's very, very committed, which I think makes her very unique too. Because, you know, some people are like, it's just art, what's the difference? I can't tell one painting from another. But it's not, you know, it definitely is it's a cool, you've done a lot there. You've done a lot in this book. You've done a lot with this character. I commend you on that. It's very, very well done. Yeah. If I do say so myself. Okay. My first official question to you is, when did you first realize that words have power, that something you wrote had an impact on someone or a situation?
Well, I was always that kid that got lost in books growing up. But then when I was an adult, someone told me about a writer, a humorist, E.F. Benson. And right after that, I was in a Barnes & Noble, and there was this like one of these big books with a combination of all of his books, or like five of his books, you know, for like $5 on the sale table. And I bought it, and I got home and I tried to read it, and I thought, this is stupid. It is the silliest thing, you know, put it back. All right. Then every time I needed something to read, I would look, I was like, no, this is so silly. Well, then a couple of years later, my mother died, and, you know, I was just devastated. So then I happened to pick up that book, and I thought, this is the funniest thing I have ever read. And for just a few minutes out of each day, and I, you know, I read a little bit for a month, I just had, I don't know, some relief or just some sign that the world was going to go on and that the world was still a good place. And I thought, I want to do that for someone. I really want to, no one needs to, you know, hear the meaning of life for me, but I really just want to give someone just a few minutes to feel better.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. That's a nice, I mean, it's a sad story, but it's a nice story. It's a nice that you found some relief there, and that someone wrote something that helped you, essentially. Mm-hmm. You
know,
helped
just you. When I needed it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But that's what you hope for as when you're creating anything.
Yeah.
It's kind of like art. You hope to elicit a response of some kind, even if it is tears, it's something that moves you, yeah. you know. Well, very good. Good answer. Next question. What is the most difficult part of the creative writing process for you? And what is the easiest?
Well, plotting is hard. And the hardest part of plotting, I think, is clues, coming up with clues and planting those clues, because it would just be so easy for the detective to run around and talk to this person and that person and solve the case. But you can't do that. you have to put a little bit of variety in there. So I want to give the reader a satisfying experience, and that means clues. And so it's always hard to think of those plan them.
Yeah. Do you find you have to go back through and like kind of weave them into the story after the fact?
I'm a big outliner, so I probably don't have to do as much of those as, say, a pantser would. But I do, you know, I do have to, you know, when I'm writing and you know, you kind of re-outline as you write, you know, and when I think of something, I've got it. I do have to go back, and because there's always the question of who knows what when, you know, you can't refer to something that didn't happen yet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to definitely fill those plot holes.
Yeah.
That's what they call those. They call mistakes or definitely plot holes kind of thing. Yeah. And they'll trip you up. They'll trip you up. You know, because I think a lot of people don't realize you go back and revise a book so many times mm-hmm. after the initial writing process. And then you like in your mind, you fix that hole because you figured it out in your head, but maybe you didn't go back all the way to the first instance of they talking about whatever the thing is, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that'll get you. That's why you need a good editor.
I know. Well, I remember the first book I wrote, it struck me what a big thing a book is. You know, I mean, you really have to keep up with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Some big and some little, like whoever is driving the car when you leave the house has to be driving it when you get to the destination. And it's just all these little details that you have to get right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one instance in your book where they're all sitting around, several of them are sitting around talking in an apartment, and a character goes to grab a beer.
Oh.
And then he's, sipping the beer, and he was like sipping the beer for a really long time. And I'm like, is this the same beer?
Yeah, I remember that edit.
Yeah. I was just like, hey, just a question here. He seems to be drinking the same beer for a really long time. And you're like, oh, he's just a teetotaler, or, you know, he's just a, he's
using it or something. Yeah, he was a detective and he was on duty, but I could have said he's just a cheap date, you know?
Yeah. I think you might've said he's a cheap date. I like laughed out loud. I'm like, well, he certainly is not from my family. Cause it's like one beer. Are you kidding me? One beer lasts like 10 minutes at a party at our house. And drinking it 3 hours later, that's for sure. It wasn't 3 hours. I'm exaggerating, but it was pretty funny. You're like, hey, he's a cheap date. So
yeah.
But yes, I do like to kind of note those things as I'm reading, just to see.
Because
you forget as the writer, because you're thinking about the whole big picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Literally the big picture.
Yes,
you got to. This is the name of the trilogy.
Right. Big picture trilogy. You're thinking about books 2 and 3. I'm just focusing on this one guy's beer. You know, my brain is doing different acrobatics than yours. So how did you arrive at the premise of this series? I know you've written other series, but this is the one we're talking about. So it is the big picture trilogy. Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had written several traditional / cozy mysteries, and I'll get back to that, but I just wanted to write something outrageous, and I wanted to have a really different outrageous protagonist. And also, I had gotten that postgraduate certification in antiquities, theft, and art crime, and I wanted to use it. I think I looked at things differently, and I just wanted to use that.
Yeah. Well, it all comes through because you're obviously very knowledgeable on the topic. Yeah, and she is definitely. Not your average typical woman.
Yeah.
She's good. So that's not your last question. Who were your favorite authors to read before you decided to pursue your own writing?
I love Jane Austen. I love, of course, you know, I mentioned E.F. Benson and of course, P.G. Wodehouse. But I still, you know, read a lot. I mean, you know, you if you're going to write, you need to read.
Yeah. Do you read every day, or do you have
I read. I just read a little bit before I go to bed. That's the only time I have to read. And yeah. If I'm reading during the daytime, it's for research.
Yeah. If I'm reading during the daytime, it's for work. And if I'm reading when it's weekends and in the evening, I read for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's all reading all the time anyway.
Yeah.
So the fifth question is always a little bit something different. So we will ask you, what experiences from your personal life have wound up in your fiction?
Well, I hope this doesn't make me seem too like a bad person, but several years ago, I have a little independent bookstore that I like to order Christmas gifts, books for kids in the family. And because there's a lot between my nieces and nephews and their kids and everybody. So, you know, I said, here are the names and the ages, just pick out books that are like about $20 each. And I went to pick them up and it was like nothing, you know? And so I'm standing in line and I'm trying to figure out what to do to make this still a good gift. And I was like, are these $20 each? And I was just kind of, you know, looking at a book on the counter, and this woman behind me says, oh, that's my book. And I was like, oh, well, like, ooh, I'm trying to get your book. And she says, well, I don't know how old your kids are. And I'm like, I don't have kids. And the noise level in this little bookstore, hooray for books, was getting louder and louder and louder, because Miss Somebody, who was dressed like a magician, was about to start toddler story time. And it was getting louder and louder and louder. And so she said something else. And I said, I don't even like children. Well, just then the story time started. You could have heard a pin drop. It was, except for hearing me yell through the whole store, I don't even like children. And oh, it gets worse. And the store owner, who was behind, you know, at the register, she says, and this woman is, we're great friends now. She says, oh, I love children, but we were never able to have any. I just wanted to go under the floor. And so I did use that in a book. And this one, like I said, she's great friends and a great supporter. And several of us Level Best authors had an event there after Malice. Yeah, it was Tina Delbart-Bellegarde and Mary Monin. And I had an event there because she and I are just, you know, she's just a great supporter. And even though that happened, and I had to use that. I just did.
Yeah, that's a very awkward exchange.
Very awkward. Yeah.
In a number of ways. Like, you pulled off a hat trick. You yelled in a bookstore, you yelled at a bunch of people with kids that were there.
Yeah.
And the lady didn't have kids. Oh, well, that's very funny.
Yeah. But yeah, every time I thought it couldn't get worse, it got worse.
Right. It's like a Nancy Meyers script scene or something. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you became friends after that.
Yeah,
that's good. That is good. First impressions. Well, that's hilarious. Okay, so rapid fire quiz. Here we go. Ready? Summer or winter?
Can I say both? Just because I love all seasons.
You can say both. You can say both for all of them.
Oh,
I do love all seasons too. I do too. Yeah. I grew up in Florida where you have zero season. You have one season. It's just it's just a little cooler. It's not. It's never different. So when I first moved north after childhood, I was like, oh wow, I was like blown away by the leaves changing. That was the weirdest thing. I never saw leaves change before. Because I'd been to like my grandparents in Indiana when it snowed, so I understood what snow was, kind of. Although I didn't like have to endure it for a long time. It was one time we were there, like, woo. But yeah, the leaves changing was really, really interesting to me because they change, all of them change. It's weird. And they fall off. Yeah, you don't have that in Florida. Sweet or savory?
Savory. Yeah, I love salty stuff.
Me too. Comedy or drama?
Comedy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you are pretty funny. Early bird or night owl?
Definitely early bird. I have to remind myself not to call people at 6:30 in the morning. I have to stop myself.
Yeah. I find myself doing that too. Sometimes I'll send an email because I'm like, they can just see that I get up early. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand what you mean because it is weird to be up at like I had someone on the show yesterday gets up at 4:30 to write. I'm like, woo, that's early even for early people. That's
hardcore.
Yeah, that's just like that in New York City. That's the night before. Bars close at 4.
Yeah, you did not drink one beer in 3 hours if you're full up.
Yeah, you can find something to do at all hours. But when I first moved there after college, I was at a bar. I was out with friends from work and they said, well, this place closes at 4. And I said, this bar closes at 4 in the morning. And they're like, every bar closes at 4. I didn't understand. I was like, this place that we're standing in? They're like, no, the entire city. I'm like, oh, okay. I was such a noob. To make fun of my accent
isn't it funny how what your definition of middle of the night, it just changes as you get older.
Oh yeah. We used to not go out until 10 o'clock. We would go out like around 9:30, 10, just because you had 6 hours ahead of you if you wanted to be out late.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, bed's looking really good around 9:30. Bed looks good. Let's do that instead. Let's have dinner at 5 and a cocktail and go to sleep. It definitely changes as you get older. Mm-hmm. So do you drink coffee or tea or both?
Tea, iced tea from Starbucks every day. I go to Starbucks every single day.
Really?
Get a huge iced tea and light ice, light water. So it could probably stand up without the cup. It's so strong. And I drink it all day. I keep this nice little caffeine buzz going all day long.
Oh, cool. So you have a system. You have a routine in place.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Very nice. All right. Well, you're the first person that's shout out to Starbucks on the show.
So yeah.
It'll send us some sponsorship money.
Yeah.
Gift cards. Yeah, exactly. Well, we know what you're doing right now because you're at Thriller Fest, mm-hmm. which is very cool. What's up next for you? Do you have events lined up? I mean, the world is starting to open up and you have a new book. What's going on?
I do have some events. Some other people, Level Besties, as we like to call ourselves, we're doing some virtual events. We have we have a library in Virginia for next Wednesday, one in Rochester, New York for the Wednesday after that. And then in August, we have some city like in Ohio that I can't think of. But anyway, we're all talking about art and art crime. And so, yeah, so it's really a lot of fun to, I mean, I just think art crime is so interesting. And it's just fun to have other authors who have written books that are, that deal with it in maybe a different way. And just been an hour talking about it. So,
it's very interesting. It's very fascinating that, you know, the fact that, you know, you've seen through my whole lifetime, you see people's, you know, masterpieces have been stolen. We still don't know where they are, kind of thing. And then you had the whole Nazi looting issue, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that happening. So there's been lots of different ways of talking about it.
Yeah.
Throughout our life, you know, sometimes they're not always great things, but they are really interesting to think about.
To read about, yeah.
Yeah, very, very cool. Well, that's great. And so it's the Big Picture Trilogy. It's called The Collector.
The Collector.
It's book one, and it's really, really good, I have to say. And where can people find you online? Can we find you?
www.lanestonebooks and Lane Stone Writer on Facebook.
Cool. All right. So everybody can find you and seek you out and connect and chat with you.
I'd love to hear from readers.
Very cool. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Have fun in New York.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Bye.